There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Okay, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along on this Thursday and little Friday Eve edition of the show. Lots to do on today's program. So hour number one, we're going to look at some Washington issues in this first half hour. Then we'll talk about some state issues when Ray Mellick from 1819 News joins me at 12:30. Then coming up in hour number two, we talked to Dr. Philip Carr. He was on last time with me. Remember they found those footprints out at White Sands, right at the White Sands missile range, and showed at least the studies they had done that mankind had been in the New World in North America for many tens of thousands of years longer than we thought. We'll talk more about that and also how that relates with the state of Alabama coming up in hour number two. So that's on the way. Let me start off with this, though. So I mentioned it to Jeff at the end of his show. So the announcement is, you know, it's official. Tim James in the gubernatorial cycle, and the more the merrier, right? More people that want the job. Maybe one sword sharpens another, right? So maybe we get a better person. I just want to point this part out, and I'm not even get into the, you know, what has dominated the text line during that discussion, the weed part of it, or the kind of the evangelical angle on it. That we could talk about that, but I'm just trying to straighten out some facts here, okay? And James said, he said, well, you know, maybe I'm not up on all the latest information. I'm going to give him that caveat, right? He's not up on the latest information. But it's not latest information that the Bayway doesn't have another 75 or 80 years. And I think I'm quoting accurately what he said in that interview. I was back in my office before I came up to the studio here. That's not, if that is true, that is contrary to every piece of information I've gleaned through years and years and years of this bridge discussion. You know, I was very interested when they said, okay, well, the bridge is going to require, the Bayway to be raised, and not like it raised and raised. In other words, to be destroyed and then brought up to current codes. And I wondered why that was. And it's the durability, it's the lifespan of the Bayway, the concrete, the metal connects the concrete with the other piece of the concrete and the rebar, the whole nine yards, has a lifespan, and I think that lifespan, everything I've heard, is not 75 or 80 more years. So it doesn't mean anything about tolls or not tolls or build or not build. It just means if we're going to have these discussions, we need the people that are having running for governor in this state, running for whatever, have the facts. Okay, that's all I'm. All I'm asking for is let's just deal with it. I am going to bring something very solid here. My next idea, the cheaper way, I think, to do all this, because of how much money this project is, let's go ahead and just, Lando, will you put me down that I'm going to say this for you, but let's drain the bay. That's what we're going to do. That's the most efficient way to do it, is just to lower the water level. We'll use the Tensaw bar and the Appalachie bar and the Blakely bar, and then we'll just pave over that and just have like culverts, big culverts where, like the Tensaw River comes out of the Appalachian or the Blakely, and then we'll just pave it. So we're going to drain the bay. That's my next move. That would get me, you know what, that would get me elected, right? If I came at it and I said, I'll tell you what Alabama's not thinking about. It's the Alabama solution. We're going to do it cheaper. These bridges and tunnels and all this stuff is poppycock. We're going to drain the bay, and then you just be able to walk right across, and it'll do it for free. So let's get that movement going. By the way, if you're new to the show, sometimes things aren't as they seem when I say them. I wholeheartedly believe in draining the bay. Yes, I do. All right, I want to move on to the Washington stuff. I thought this was interesting, and Dalton, if you hear something that gets you to react, you can grab your headphones and hop in, because Dalton and I did an hour or more on breaking down the Ray Epps discussion here around the January 6th riot, insurrection, brouhaha, whatever you want to call it. Lord knows I'm tired of picking through the semantics on the text line. I'll call it a riot. But Ray Epps was this figure that has been discussed so much in this. What was he? A confidential informant? Was he an agent? An agent provocateur in what happened on the 6th? Now, and once again, for the disclaimer here on the back of the package, the knuckleheads that went in to the Capitol and broke in and went and did all this, prosecute them by the rule of law. Don't try to make it. Don't use it like. Don't overly prosecute to make an example, but follow the law. What's the law say if you do that? Then punish them. They shouldn't have been in there. But is there more to this story? And yesterday, which, by the way, we still have our eyes on Washington, too, for the SCOTUS ruling on vaccine mandate. But Senator Cruz yesterday was talking about the January 6th commission and the investigation. I want to run a couple clips here from what Senator Cruz said yesterday. So this is positive Ted Cruz news here for Ted Cruz fans. Ted Cruz earlier yesterday with his commentary. Let's go to a cut one.
Did any FBI agents or...
Okay, hold on. Let me. I'll set that up. So before we do that, that is Senator Ted Cruz is talking to senior FBI agent Jill Sanborn on whether agents took part in the assault of the Capitol. So you got to... Okay, so that's a little setup here. So that he's questioning the FBI senior agent Jill Sanborn.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants actively participate in the events of January 6th? Yes or no?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants commit crimes of violence on January 6th?
I can't answer that, sir.
Did any FBI agents or FBI informants actively encourage and incite crimes of violence on January 6th?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Okay. So, first of all, Dalton, did you hear they have not figured out the mix minus on the audio system there in Congress? Okay. So, possibly, Senior Agent Sanborn could say that because by rule of the FBI, she is not able to say that, which I would love to hear if she said, hey, I can't answer these questions because of Section 4, Part 5. You know, I don't like it, but I would, if she came out and said, but she says, I can't answer that. Can't answer that. So more of this questioning here. So, I mean, he asked very specific questions. Let's take Cruz, an attorney, he's going to do it, but he asked very specific questions. I think were worth asking. And I think as an American citizen, let alone a senator, I deserve an answer on that. It went on further here.
Did Mr. Epps urge them to tear down the barricades?
Listen to this pause here.
Sir, similar to the other answers, I cannot answer that.
Once again, talk about Ray Epps. Did he urge them to tear down the barricades?
Shortly thereafter, the FBI put out a public post seeking information on individuals connected with violent crimes on January 6th. Among those individuals, in the bottom there, is Mr. Epps. The FBI publicly asked for information, identifying, offering cash rewards leading to the arrest. This was posted, and then, sometime later, magically, Mr. Epps disappeared from the public posting. According to public records, Mr. Epps has not been charged with anything. No one's explained why a person videoed urging people to go to the Capitol, a person whose conduct was so suspect the crowd believed he was a Fed, would magically disappear from the list of people the FBI was looking at.
Okay. So, and yes, we've been on this story for quite a long time here at FM Talk 106.5. We've so many shows have talked about it. We've looked into it. Like I said, Dalton and I, many months ago, had a deep dive hour or more into this. But with this questioning yesterday, I think the senator asked something that's a fair question for all. Do we not have the right to know that? Is it so classified that we shouldn't have a right to know it? And I started putting stuff together in my head, too. Remember with the inaugural speech of President Biden, which happened not this winter is the winter of sickness and death. That was the winter of light, right? This is winter of death is the one we're in now, according to the president. All right. So in the previous winter, when he had his inaugural speech in a cold, blustery Washington day, he went and he was going to be this great uniter, right? But at the same time, he was talking about the domestic terrorist. So coming in, that tells me, here's a clue, right? That if he's focused on domestic terrorist like this, then it tells me then he had told the FBI to be focused, which they should always be. Listen, there's very good reason to look at domestic terrorism as well. You shouldn't ignore it. But it was like the only thing to President Biden, right? It was the number one thing, the number one danger, which then would tell you, okay, so the FBI is going to be already working on it or beginning to work on it seriously. So they are looking into this. They didn't just up and do that, right? They had been doing it. Before the president's going to say do it, they'd been doing it. So you're telling me the FBI was ignorant of the people that were going to show up there? If they were, if the FBI was ignorant of what happened on January 6th, the insurrection, riot, brouhaha, whatever you want to call it, they were ignorant, then they weren't doing their job. And I think they were doing the job. I think they were aware of it. If you think back, and this is something I talked to Dalton about, too, in the past, I've talked about on the show quite a bit. I thought about what the FBI did in the after 9/11. Okay. And so many things were done to try to keep the homeland safe. And I respect a lot of that. But I want to point out that one of the mechanisms used was to infiltrate extremist groups, Muslim extremist groups here in the country. Right. And they get somebody in there as a they pop him on something else and put him in there as a plant, or they'd set like a honey trap in a way. In other words, set it up to where, hey, don't you want to attack the United States? Okay, well, here's how you do it. Here's then they would like sell him the, you know, air quotes here, a bomb making stuff. They make the bomb and go plant it over here and do this. And here's your detonator. It's on your cell phone and you press this and it'll detonate and blow up the thing. Then the person presses the phone key or whatever, and the detonation doesn't happen. Then the FBI arrests them and says they've thwarted a plot against the United States. Yeah. On the margin, you could take out people that might be on the edge of being radicalized and doing something like that. So it's not a completely bad idea for the FBI, but it is pretty darn close to an entrapment, right? But it showed that the FBI had a system of having people in place, right, close to these groups, to incentivize them to do something that they could bust them on. Is it a bridge too far to say something similar could have been done on the domestic side? That something like that could have been set up for January 6th, not taking any responsibility away from the knuckleheads that followed if Ray Epps was telling them to go to knock down the barricade, that they did it. If Ray Epps would have told me to knock down the barricade, I'd have said, all right, stick it. But there are people that can be motivated there, and I think there were a lot of them, if you saw, that went ahead and stormed the Capitol. So it's just another angle here. And this was not a real judgment on the responsibility of then-President Trump or Speaker Pelosi. It's a judgment on what we want law enforcement to do. Is it to let the crime happen so you can bust this bunch of people, or is it to prevent it from happening in the first place if you know it's going to happen? And I think that's what Senator Cruz was getting to yesterday and asking questions that he was not getting answers to that should be a fair question for a senator of the United States to ask federal law enforcement. What do you think? Come back. We'll grab your calls and texts at 343-0106. So that's just something on that and draining the bay. You know, things on my mind as I get started. Oh, and we come back to Biden job approval numbers. Yikes. I'd have to take this semester over.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By the way, you can check this out on the front page of our website, fmtalk1065.com, and also through our Facebook page, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online opinion poll question. If the primary election were today, this is on the Republican side, primary election were today, who would you have your vote, who would you vote for governor of Alabama? Right now, Jim Ziegler and Tim James are tied at 43% each. Lou Burdette coming in at 14%. Governor Ivey, the current governor of the state of Alabama, 0%. Y'all go, if you hear that and that shocks you, go vote. Let's get the votes in, make sure we're getting a... This is not a scientific poll. We're about to talk about a scientific poll. This is a for entertainment purposes only poll, non-scientific. It often has borne out to be pretty true, but it is not a scientific poll in no way, shape, or form. But the Quinnipiac poll is, and we'll get to that in just a second. Plus, I don't know when the Supreme Court was supposed to come down with a ruling on the vaccine mandate for business today. That's what I was hearing. We'll keep our eyes on that. That news breaks, we'll pass along. I will, once again, go back to what I was saying yesterday and saying earlier in the week, maybe at the end of last week. Just help me. I'm just trying to use, this isn't even political. It's what I think is critical thinking here, right? If Omicron, even Fauci now has said, so Walensky has said it and Fauci said it, that like everybody's going to get Omicron. Everybody's getting it. If you're double vaxxed and boosted and all that kind of with sprinkles on top, everything, you're still getting it. What's the purpose of the mandate? Just pragmatically. If the point of the mandate was, you could disagree with the politics of it, but just understand, if the point of the mandate was public safety, you had an executive order about public safety using OSHA to implement this to keep people from spreading, but it only happens in businesses with over 100 people, but keep people from spreading coronavirus. But if everybody can get it, it doesn't matter if you're vaccinated or not. So where is the... Get off the idealistic side for a second. Just pragmatically look at it. So you're, you know, Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, liberals. Pragmatically, what's the point of it? I hope that's resonating with the justices. I don't know. After some of the things they said in the early testimony there and their ignorance of how it works, I'm worried. All right, this Quinnipiac poll. Now, this is a real poll. This is not a entertainment purposes only. And it's a poll. They asked a lot of stuff in this Quinnipiac poll, but I'm going to drill down to the update here on President Biden's approval rating overall and then on some specifics. So Quinnipiac says on Biden's job approval, Americans give President Biden a negative 33 to 53% job approval rating, while 13% did not offer an opinion. In November, Americans gave Biden a negative 36 to 53% job approval rating with 10% not offering opinion. So I guess the other negatives moved to did not reply, but it's gone down by 3 points. Among Democrats in today's poll, 75% approve of the job President Biden's doing, 14% disapprove, and 11% did not offer an opinion. Among Democrats in November, 87% approved. Yikes. Pretty big drop there. 7% disapproved and 6% did not offer an opinion. Reminder, too, this is the honeymoon period. This is when presidents, you know, are like most liked in their terms. In November, registered voters gave Biden 38 to 53% job approval rating with 9% not offering an opinion. Among adults, Americans give negative scores on the following three issues when asked about Biden's handling of the economy. 34% approve, 57% disapprove. This is all over, this is Americans, not Republican, Democrat. This is all Americans. 34% approve, 57% disapprove. In foreign policy, 35% approve, while 54% disapprove. In response to the coronavirus, 39% approve, 55% disapprove. House committees, I'm going to get to that story in a second. We'll do that with Ray Melick. But yeah, that's a pretty interesting drop there. On the foreign policy thing, you know, I'm going to keep bringing it up, not for political jabs, but because I continue to be disgusted by the way we left Afghanistan. And we'll have more stories on that. I got them stacked up, actually, maybe even come up on tomorrow's show. 35% approve of the foreign policy, 54% disapprove. I don't know when that fades for President Biden, but the economy is sure as heck not. 34% approving of that, 57% disapproving. And coronavirus response, remember, he's going to beat the virus. 39% approve, 55% disapproving of that. So those are some of the Quinnipiac numbers. But I'd love to also get your votes in our entertainment purposes only poll over at the front page of FMTalk1065.com. If it was primary day today and you're a Republican, who would you vote for governor of the state of Alabama? Crowded list. Tell me who your selection would be, and we'll talk about it when it comes up on the website or our Facebook page. Ray Bellick, 1819news.com. He's our guest, and he's on the way next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, 1235, FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile. I guess we're not, I mean, a little bit of attention, but Leanna, maybe on social media, my Drain the Bay idea. I mean, I want to just, with an honest heart, offer this in the discussion when we start getting into the, you know, the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project. But I mean, wouldn't it be an Alabama solution a lot cheaper if we just drain Mobile Bay and then we just put some culverts there at the, where the Tensaw River comes out, Appalachian River, Blakely River, just big, big old culverts, and we pave right. What? I think it's a, all right, if I can't get y'all on board, I'm just, could you just keep searching it on social media, see if I can get some traction out there, Leanna? Let me know if that happens. All right, I'll bring on editor-in-chief of 1819news.com, Ray Bellick, who probably didn't want to talk about any of that Drain the Bay proposal. So I'll leave you out of it unless you want to. You think that's a solid way to do it?
I wish, Sean, I really regret that I don't get to hear you every day. And I need to just start signing on to internet or something, because drain the Mobile. Do you know how many people just had heart attacks because of all the stuff they probably dumped down there that would come back to life if they drained it and found all that stuff?
You know how many crimes would be solved? How much evidence?
Yeah. But how many people would be fleeing the state to try to get away before? You just dredged up, people all over there just wrecked cars going, oh my God.
No, they're not going to do that. I threw that thing off years ago. All right. Yeah. So if that starts to get traction, I'll let you know. But I want to talk about some of the stories on the front page here at 1819news.com. This one is one that goes into a sports discussion, but also political discussion, that NIL, that name, image, and likeness. And y'all have a story up. House Committee approves act to repeal law allowing student athletes to be compensated. Help me with this one.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, because when the NCAA and the college athletes started talking about allowing athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness, a lot of states saw this for a problem that I think it is that the NCAA is going to have to deal with. Now what happened was, and I'm not, I haven't reviewed the Alabama statute lately, but basically it was that athletes can profit off their name, image, and likeness, but it can't be used as a way to recruit them to go to a specific school, and I don't know how you differentiate, but it was there. Then they found out that a lot of other states are just going by the NCAA rule, which is much broader and allows a lot more freedom for athletes to do that kind of thing. And so, the convenience of this is Alabama just lost the national championship game. Mm-hmm. What can we do to make sure they're not put in that position again? Hey, let's revoke this rule and let them go out and make sure there's nothing inhibiting them from recruiting the best, as if there were anything inhibiting Alabama from recruiting the best athletes, Auburn for that matter.
Well, yeah, did anybody see, you know, Saban or Harsin up at Goat Hill saying, hey, I'm here to lobby on the, you know, on this NIL. Y'all need to do something.
Yeah, and they, I guarantee you, if Nick Saban in particular had shown up at Goat Hill, they would have been lined up to kiss the ring, or the seven rings, whatever it may be in his case. I think the issue becomes, and we'll just use Texas A&M as an example. The rumor, the stories out there are basically that they're already telling their athletes, you sign with us, we are guaranteed this much income. We have businesses already lined up. We're going to pay you for your endorsement, the capabilities, and you will make this X amount of dollars guaranteed. That's one of the problems the NCAA's got to deal with, because it is just gotten to be out of hand in a recruiting tool. But at the same time, if there's a law in some states that limit what athletes can make, I think that's what the state legislature is going to do. I think they're supposed to vote on it maybe as quick as today. I think it'll be an easy vote. It was unanimous coming out of committee. I don't see the overall legislature having a problem with this, just to revoke it. And so whatever the NCAA says is good with us. Go out there and get those athletes and get all these businesses lined up, start putting money in their pocket just as soon as they sign their scholarship papers.
Okay, so it would be to revert back to the NCAA rules are the least restrictive. Alabama currently right. is one step up in restriction, so we would go back to just doing the NCAA thing.
Yeah, basically that's it. All we've done is said, let's just follow it. We'll go with the NCAA rule and let it be the Wild West out there in terms of the money that can be made by college athletes.
Yeah, I saw a Bryce Young ad yesterday, the first of those I'd ever seen. So it is afoot for sure. All right, session obviously is the back end. You and I talked about this last week. There's one conventional wisdom, whether it's wise or not, that they, in a year like this, they want to get done with session so the politicians can go back to raising money and campaigning, right, and getting on the trail. And that's kind of what we'd always thought. But somebody said, well, with all this ARPA money and all this extra in here, the session may last longer than you think. You got any feel on that, Ray? What do you think?
Well, it's interesting. Again, yesterday, as the ARPA money, the Relief Act money was being discussed, apparently there was a huge breakdown in the Senate side anyway, with everybody had their own view on how that was supposed to be spent. There's no sort of unanimity about this. And they are talking, as you know, about calling a special session within the session. Now, the conspiracy theories among us, because you can't raise money for your campaign while the legislature is in session, and that applies even to people who are not members of the legislation. So there is a huge advantage for incumbents to drag this thing out to prohibit any opposition they may have from being able to go and raise money. If you want to get into conspiracy theories, that's what this has happened. That's what this is all about. I don't know what they'll do. I can't believe they'll be that blatant, but they may be. But it's going to be, the other part, I sat in on Tuesday with the Budget Committee, and they specifically said, and specifically to education, we can't have superintendents and districts doing things financially that in a couple of years, when this money kind of runs out, they come to us saying, hey, you got to keep it going. You've got to keep funding us to the level we want to be funded at. And then that night, Governor Ivey gives everybody a 4% raise, which is exactly, to me, what they were saying. Hey, don't make long-term promises. We may not have this money for that long. And yet she did just obligate the legislature to 4% raises, not only for teachers but also government employees. Not saying it's not due, not saying it's not overdue. I just thought it was kind of ironic that her own budget people were saying, don't do this.
Yep.
And then she turns around and says, I'm doing it anyway.
Now, I listen to Bill Poole talk about that when he's on Capital Journal. And I mean, he makes a solid point, and I think what you're saying, and the nuance is important. You could give a 4% raise, but don't give it because of the ARPA money, because that's a one-time thing. Use that for capital investments, not reoccurring cost.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think this is a chance to really even save some money from the regular revenue stream. And of course, and I've been a proponent of even put a hold on the gas tax, reduce the grocery tax, do something to let the average person keep a little more money from their paycheck week to week or month to month, however they're paid, and use that money. And then, when this stuff runs out, let's figure out where we are. But politicians just, they can't help but finding ways to spend money because they think that gets them votes. And it's like an addiction, and they just can't break themselves of the habit.
Well, we'll hear how they wouldn't do it from six of the seven candidates in the gubernatorial cycle. I think there's seven now, right? That with the announcement from Tim James.
Yeah, there's some outliers out there that are interesting people, and I'm not sure what the number actually is.
I think it's seven. Yeah, I think it's seven on the list, including Governor Ivey. So six, six candidates, the incumbent, and six others. So, I mean, you've got Tim, and this is always the fun game, too, is what lane, right? We talk about this in pod. They're in this lane, they're in that lane. But I see, maybe not of them, all of them, there's some also Rands here. I'm just going to say that. But, I mean, some of them occupy the same lane. That's interesting. Even within Republican politics, there's some occupying, who can be, I'm the grassroots person. Well, no, I'm the grassroots person. Well, they're the establishment. Well, there's two of them, they're establishment. It is interesting.
And I, you know, I'm the political outsider. Well, no, you've been in politics before, but oh no, that doesn't count. You know, so I love how everybody is fleeing from the political insider label, and you know, quite honestly, I get that, but I also want somebody that can get into Montgomery and know how things work and make them work more to our advantage. So I want a little bit of insider, but maybe not the complete insider. But I'm, you're right. There's a few candidates. I was on the other night looking, and maybe it's Senate. There's a couple of people I'd never even heard of. One, a lady from Mobile, Kristen LaPriest or something, that's running for Senate. Her name's on the list. I never don't know anything about this person or heard anything about her at all. So there's always those kind of fringe candidates that I guess put their name on the ballot and hope for a miracle.
Or just say, hey, yeah, I was a senatorial candidate at one time.
Yeah.
Use that like at a job interview. It's kind of looking at the insider versus outsider. I just wonder, just because my brain works kind of in different ways, I wonder if that's not the lane for somebody to take. If you didn't have traction and you're not going to win amongst I'm the outsider. So, yeah, I've been in office before. Like you said, I know how to get things done. I'm going to do them differently, and I have the political capital to come in here and pushing people around and get things done right for the people of Alabama. I mean, if everybody's the political outsider, then maybe it's time for somebody to say, well, I'm kind of the insider.
Just to be different and embrace it, you know.
Yeah.
You really want somebody that's got to learn on the job, where I can come in here from day one and know how to get it done.
I mean, it's something.
Yeah. It is just, it's interesting, but everybody wants to be the outsider, even the people who have been inside. They want to be known as the outsider.
Right. We have to have a score. One of those, maybe 1819news.com can do, whenever there's a statement about being an outsider, y'all can score that for its veracity. Like, you know, we have whatever, we'll give it how many A's for Alabama, you know, out of five. Is that true or not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and take Tim James, you know, certainly he's a businessman, but he's run for office before. His father was governor. So is he an insider or is he an outsider? What's he going to claim here?
He's going outsider. Yeah, he's going outsider right now. I see how long that stands up.
Yeah. And then you've got the others that are clearly so far outside that some people may not even know they may not know where the door is. You know,
that's correct.
Just one of those things. They wouldn't know how to get inside if somebody had a neon sign.
Well said. Before we wrap up, too, I want to, so many stories y'all can check out at 1819news.com. This one about Congressman Mo Brooks and candidate for Senate, and a bill here, the Local Control Act, right? That's what this is called?
Yeah.
Now, what does this do? Because I reading through it, and we, our part of the state of Alabama, has been one of those places where the federal government said they're going to house people in the past. So that's one thing that people, you know, say, okay, is that this? Is that where, you know, like I think it was an airfield over in Baldwin County last time. They were going to house people there. Is this having to deal with that kind of move from the feds?
You know, well here's the main thing, Sean. It has to do with nothing. Is a Republican in a Democratic-controlled House, this will not even make it out of committee. So this is strictly to be able to sell as part of his campaign, which is fine. I mean, when you're a Republican right now in the House and you're frustrated, you've got to enter bills that you know, to get you some publicity with your constituents or whatever it is you're trying to do. My understanding of it, and I confess to not having really studied this closely, I know Brandon Mosley and the others that have written this, is it just simply gives cities the ability to reject and say, we don't want those folks here. Don't be bringing this group in. There's a lot of rumors about night flights and people coming in at odd times and being housed. And some of it's, hysterical. Some of it, there obviously are places where these folks are going, as you pointed out. And it does create sort of an interesting deal. But while Mo is pushing that, I think the thing that everybody remember is, it's not going to happen.
And also remember, y'all, what Ray's talking about, that is also true at a state level, that there will be bills that are maybe being discussed as we speak on Goat Hill that are doubling down on things that are already done or things that aren't needed. They sound good, but until you investigate the fact that, well, that law is already set by the, you know, that rule is already set by this other law, but, you know, it is good fodder for the campaign trail.
Yeah, there's show bills that you want to parade around and tell everybody, well, I stood up for you and did this. And then there are bills that actually get something done for the people of Alabama. And unfortunately, even at D.C. or Montgomery, the bulk of them are show bills that are just there to show and brag about. I'm interested in the ones that really get down to it and what can really help, not just poor people or old people or rich people, or just everybody. Let me have a bill that helps everybody.
Speaking of which, any other traction on the eliminating, you mentioned a second ago, but eliminating the grocery tax, anything there? Do you think that stands a chance?
You know, it is interesting. We've been talking to folks. Mike Holmes is going to introduce it in the House. I forgot who's doing it in the Senate. They are trying to collect sponsors, co-sponsors. And while I think the leadership is against it because they see it as a loss of revenue, I think it's one of those things that when people hear it, they go, yeah, well, that could really help a lot of people. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic as that thing's discussed. And if they can get up enough people to really go against leadership, or if leadership succumbs to the pressure and says, all right, maybe if it's a reduction of 4% to 2% for the state part of grocery tax, maybe this is something we're going to have to do.
All right, let's do this. As people want to go check out, we keep saying, 1819news.com. Tell them about the website.
Sure, 1819news.com. If you go to the bottom of the page, you can sign up for our newsletter, in which case you'll get the daily detail and the daily truth will come into your inbox. But we are a full-service statewide news organization, got a great lineup of conservative columnists, and we're also now in the podcast business of both video and audio. Wherever you get it, YouTube, Spotify, Gab, whatever you may go to for podcasts, you can find the 1819 News podcast as well. And we encourage people to start checking those out.
Editor-in-Chief, 1819news.com, Ray Melick. Enjoyed the conversation. We'll talk again next week.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you, Sean.
All right, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. Graphic calls and text. Also, coming up in hour number two, mentioned a return to a discussion we had, a couple months ago. Dr. Philip Carr, University of South Alabama anthropologist, is going to join us to talk about the first Alabamians and the first people in the New World. Remember that thing at White Sands where it showed maybe they had been here a lot longer than previously thought? Well, we'll talk about that coming up in just a few.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, about 6 minutes. What's that? You say 6 minutes in front of the hour. It's 12:54, y'all. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Did you see the just kind of odds and ends story? The of Hoda Muthana. Do you remember the story of this woman, Alabama woman, Hoda Muthana, who remember this left Alabama to join ISIS? Remember this whole story? That's been a while. So went to join ISIS and became an ISIS bride. Ladies, I mean, if it's tough being married to, you know, regular American guy, imagine being an ISIS bride. You come back, maybe that's what we should do. You come back and then you'd say, well, you know, he's not the greatest, but he's not a member of ISIS. Now, the big story, I guess, is the United States Supreme Court, because they're busy hearing the questions around the vaccine mandate, aren't able to hear her case. Story from AL.com. They were, I guess, AL.com story, the Associated Press story they put on there, said U.S. Supreme Court has refused to hear the appeal of a woman who left home in Alabama to join the Islamic State terror group, but then decided she wanted to come back to the United States. The justices declined without comment this week to consider the appeal of Hoda Muthana, yeah, I think, who was born in New Jersey in October of 94, to a diplomat from Yemen and grew up in Birmingham. Muthana left the U.S. to join the Islamic State in 2014, apparently after becoming radicalized online. While she was overseas, the government determined she was not a U.S. citizen and revoked her passport. Like, why should we expect that she would have a case in front of the Supreme Court? She's not a citizen, and she went to be an ISIS bride. All right. Let me go. Oh, my gosh. We got to make this fast. Paul in Mobile is up first. Hey, Paul.
Hey, you know, the you could pick any negative poll on Biden right now, and of course that happens.
Yeah, there's
to a
lots
lot
of them. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Right, but let me go to the main thing about that Quinnipiac poll. It
the
also says
poll?
That the real story is it says Democrats are favored by 4%.
In what?
In the Quinnipiac poll.
In what part of
poll?
In what favored by 4% in what?
Congressional.
In the midterms.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think keep
that's
doing
a great
what you're
irony,
doing.
Isn't it?
I think keep doing what you're doing. I think you've got the Republicans really on the run here for the midterms, Paul.
No, I'm just saying the irony. That's where stories made. The irony.
Yes. So
just saying. That's
and,
what you should have talked about.
Well, you know, next time I get ready to put the show together, hopefully you can call up and help produce it and tell me what I should
will.
Do.
I'll
good.
Help you.
Because I've had no success over the years, so I appreciate your input. As always, I do like Paul. Let's see. So where is that part? There's like a ton of stuff here. I'm sorry, Paul. I got stuck in all the Biden job approval deficits here. The economy. All right. Trump in 2024. Is that what you're talking about? It says nearly 6 in 10 Americans say they would like not. They would not like to see Donald Trump run for president in 2024, similar to an October 19th, 2021 survey. So, in other words, it's static there. The new one in today's survey, Republicans say 69% to 23% that they do want to see Trump run in 2024. So, we'll have to, when I sit down in the big easy chair tonight for some light reading. I'll break out all the different parts of today's Quinnipiac poll. But coming back, we'll go old school, real old school in the state of Alabama. Dr. Philip Carr joins us next right here on Midday Mobile.